Becky, thank you so much for joining us here today. You're my icon today, which is really exciting. I get to ask you some questions and talk to you a little bit about your career as an athlete and as a coach, an exceptional coach. Look, I guess, you know, I've played against you for many years back in the WNBA, and what has always struck me as just incredible about you is the fact that you've just done it on your own terms. Like, you've got to where you got to regardless of any barrier that's been put in front of you. You became an awesome player with New York Liberty and then heading over to San Antonio. And I just want to say congratulations. But talk to me, like, tell me what has driven you, and how did you get that fire and that competitive spirit? And you're like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do, and I'm going to get there.
You know, as you know, some of it, I mean, you're kind of born with the same chip, that just competitiveness. Like, it's so funny being a coach now, because, you know, you don't, like, if I had to list something of what I want in a player, and it doesn't matter, male, female, athlete, competitor. I want a competitor. I'll take more competitiveness over a little bit more talent, because at the end of the day, there's so many talented people that are sitting on couches or not getting up and being the best that they could be. And so for me, you know, my whole journey, obviously, I don't look like a basketball player. I'm not tall. I got mistaken for the water girl so many times walking through airports. It's like, no, I play too, you know. But I think the resilience piece, the competitiveness, like, kind of just always been an outsider, Lauren. I've kind of been the person not picked. I went to a private school and switched over to public school. So, you know, girls already kind of had their friendships formed. Like, I've always just kind of been on the outside looking in. And when it's that way, you know, with whether it's in basketball or in life or politics, whatever it is, you either have a choice to sit there and stay on the outside or find a way in. And so my whole journey's just been about finding a way.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. So I guess, like, talk about when you were you weren't drafted into the WNBA, but then you became, like, all I know is I was fighting for MVPs with you for a good chunk of my career.
Which you always won.
Yeah, but I also was, you know, 3 feet taller than you, and, you know, but as a point guard, you were just so incredible. And, like, that resilience piece, you've just basically torn down every single barrier that's been put in front of you, and you've gone and done it regardless. And I think that, to me, is just one of the most special things about you. What advice would you give to other women who, you know, can't follow the traditional path? Like, they haven't been selected for teams, they haven't got opportunities, they haven't been able to, you know, upskill or get the coaching gig that they wanted, things like that. What sort of advice would you give them?
I would just say stay the course. Like, your journey is specific and individual to you. And there's nothing that you're going through in any moment, good or bad, but especially the bad, that you're not going to be using later on in life. And I think what I'm most grateful for is probably, like, the hard stuff, the torn Achilles, the not being picked on, you know, Team USA, or, like, all the stuff that didn't go right for me. I can see now, looking back on it, that, wow, like, I needed to go through that experience because I needed to grow in a certain way, or that changed me as a person in a certain way. And so you start putting all these kind of, like, little pieces, these chess pieces together, and then you look back and it's like, wow, like, it really had to happen that way. Yeah. And so I believe good and bad, but really the bad, I'm thankful for the bad. I'm thankful for the hard, because it made me who I am. Yeah. And it teaches you toughness, like resiliency, because you only have, like I said, you only have two options, you know. You either stay down or you get back up.
Yep, it's true. Do you mind if I ask you about the Russian, playing with Russia? Do you mind if I ask you about that?
No.
You were there. Yeah, I know. We played against each other. It was awesome. Yes. But I guess for you, you were one of the first athletes to take a passport and go. And it was pretty controversial at the time, go and play for Russia. And, I mean, a lot of athletes are doing it now. But, again, you've paved the way for so many women to be able to go and earn a living playing basketball. And, you know, credit to you. You're amazing. And, you know, there was a lot of people sort of snickering and saying stuff, but you were like, this is my career, I'll do what I want. And look, I was playing over in Russia then too at the time with Sparta and Carl Spartak, whatever it was at the time. But look, I just, yeah. So how did that sort of come about for you? And like, why did you choose to do that?
It really just came down to, I just saw that it wasn't going to work out with the US team. I thought, you know, actually with me and you in the MVP race, like that was 2007. So 2008, we're going into Beijing, and Team USA is just not even giving me a sniff. And it was like, okay.
Yeah, like MVP contender. Yeah.
You know, okay. I'll go another route. And, you know, I think the thing that probably made me the most upset is how kind of ugly it got. Cause it didn't have to. Either side had to say, and especially from their side, like, look, Becky's a great player, but we're going in another direction, and just leave it there. Like, it got into this whole patriotism and like, I'm a traitor. This and that. It's like, dude, we're playing basketball. I can either be like, you know, doing hot dogs on the grill and watching you guys play, or I can go over there and compete. Like,
yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, you just have to do what's right for you. And whether you do it all right, Lauren, or you do it all wrong, somebody's always going to have something to say. And so you really have to get to the point where, like, you don't care. Like, I don't care if you like me, you don't like me. Like, I got to be me. And it's either you with it or you're not. And so at the end of the day, that's what I did. I just made the choice that was best for me. That was it.
Yep. Fair enough. That was good. Well, like I said, a lot of women now are doing exactly what you did, and you paved the way in that respect and given people other pathways and other opportunities. So again, icon. male champions of change. I guess because you like went into coaching over in the NBA, and we're going to get to your coaching in a second, but just more importantly, how important have male allies been for you in your journey and where you've got to, particularly in coaching? As opposed to women.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it comes down to the human being, because there's been women that have not been allies.
Yeah.
Even though they're women, you know, there's been men that have been great allies, and there's others that haven't. I think initially I'll just go back to my greatest ally has probably been my dad and my brother. You know, I was a little tomboy running around playing hoops with my brother all the time. And I really had like really great male coaches a lot. You know, Dan Hughes, Richie Adubato, Tom Collin, Greg Williams. I mean, I could go down the list of like really great coaches that I've had, that really invested in me. So fast forward into coaching, and I mean, I got like the best coach in the history of basketball saying, hey, I'll invest in you. I'll invest time. I want to develop your coaching skill. Like, I see something in you. And that, it's like, to have somebody, you know, come alongside you and see something special in you is really, it's a confidence booster. It's like some things that you think are just so normal because it's just you being you, but other people find it special because maybe they don't have it. And then, you know, I refer to, like, you know, if Henry Ford came along and I was into cars back in the 30s and 40s and was like, hey, I'm going to teach you about the Model T. I'd be like, heck yeah, I'm going into it. Like, you know? Yeah. And so when he asked me to come on, and he's really an ally on so many fronts for so many people, whether that's, you know, equality, just human rights, whatever it might be. You know, he's been an ally in so many things, but he's just a guy that really invested so much time and energy and hours into developing me as a coach. And so I love that man. You know, I'll be forever indebted to Pop.
Yeah. It was just from being a complete outsider, you know, just watching that all evolve and your development as an assistant coach and in the NBA Summer League and everything. It was incredible. Like, and also knowing you as a person, but, it was awesome just being a basketball person from Australia on the other side of the world, watching you do your thing on the sidelines. So it was incredible. So, yeah, awesome.
Well, we had a couple good Aussies, you know, Patty Mills.
Yeah.
Doc was on our team last year. He's with Phoenix this year. So Matt Nelson is an assistant coach now. I mean, there's Aussies y'all are just spraying the world with talent. So we got to get you from down under and bring you out to the rest of the world so we can all enjoy your talents.
Oh, but we're fun people too. That's the main thing.
The funnest and the toughest. The toughest. Like, I've never met a soft Australian. Like, they're tough.
They exist.
They exist. I'm sure you know a couple. They exist. Yeah. I don't know any. They haven't made it to the other side of the pond from what I've seen.
That's funny. All right. We might move over to coaching anyway, just because you are a coach now. But so many, I guess, in Australia, there's this misconception that basketball, like male basketballers are different to female basketball, like different plays are run, you run different sets, defenses, things like that. Is that true? Like,
as much as you know how coaches, we draw on the board X's and O's, right? As much as there's no genitalia on those X's and O's, there is no difference. The pick and roll schemes are the same. It's all the same. It's so basic and fundamental and how similar it is that it's actually like, not boring, but like mundane. It's so similar. Now granted, about the only thing that the guys do that, and even women, you can still draw like lob plays. You're not going to get a dunk. But other than that, it's stupid how similar it is. It really is. And I think what was fun for me was to this year, you know, going from the men's side to the women's side was just like trying different things. Things that I saw in the NBA and that I hadn't really seen in the W. So far as like a defense, like junk defense, you know, a triangle in two, a box in one, a 3-2, a 2-3. You know, a press or whatever. Like it was just fun to do kind of different things that, not that the women can't, they just haven't been doing it for a while. You know, cause those junk defenses have been around forever. But it was kind of fun to bring different things and, really open up the floor. And that just is specific to my team. I mean, you guys in Seattle with you know, Stewie and Sue and Julie, you guys always shot a lot of threes anyways, even when you were there. I mean, you guys got them up. And so the game just keeps evolving like that. You know, I think one of the things with you, why you were so, I mean, your size, obviously, but you were kind of the first, you were like a Dirk in a way, like for the women's game, like a big that shoots threes, can go in the post, can go to the nail and do ISOs, just hurt you in so many different ways. But now you see the game expanding. Now you got Jonquel Jones, Stewie. I mean, so many bigs now are shooting threes, but you were really kind of the first one who it was really part of your game. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to shoot one or two. Like there'd be games where you were just getting them up. And I think players like yourself really are the people that opened up the game, just like Dirk did for the men. And now you see everybody shooting threes. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's positionless.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the game's really evolving like that because everyone's got multiple skill sets and, you know, and especially in the women's game, just watching the season that just went by and then also seeing Asia out here play, oh my God, like these kids are so talented. It's so awesome. So how exciting that you get to coach them and be a part of that. So yeah, you coached the Las Vegas Aces to their first championship this year and first year head coach in the WNBA, which is, again, I don't think anyone's ever done that. So another barrier broken, just another one. How do you see the women's game changing? I guess we just really touched on it then. It's positionless, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've got players like Chelsea Gray who can pretty much do, like, the way that she just took over in the final series was just like, oh my God. Like, can you just talk to me about some of your players? Because I don't have questions. It's more they're incredible.
Well, just athletes. Chelsea is somebody, first of all, she's super cerebral. You know, she really, really thinks the game. She sees the game 2-3 steps ahead. You know, when other people are playing checkers, Chelsea's playing chess. And me and her really identify. We see the game very similarly. But talk about ways that the game is evolving. To have an ISO one-on-one player that you just go and give him the ball. I mean, you know, you watch NBA games. They give the ball to Luka. They give the ball to LeBron. Now we're having more and more. You could give the ball to Jewel, to Stewie, where they could just go get one shot off. Like, for me, I needed a screen. Like, you know, these players now – They just need a little space, and it's good. And so I think, you know, I look back when I played, and I played obviously a few years before you, but like player for player, these players are more skilled and talented.
Yeah.
Not that there wasn't elite people in our kind of era. There were, and it would translate. The game would translate. But when you're talking about players, you know, 8 through 12, that quality of player has really evolved for the women's game. I mean, there's just so many good players. I can't wait for the W to expand because there's so many good players that aren't on teams.
Yeah.
Let me just go say one more thing about why it's so hard to win in the W. When you have 12 teams, right, and you have that condensed pool of skill and talent, like think about if the NBA had 12 teams and all those players that were on those other, you know, 18 teams were all on those teams, and how difficult it would be to win night in and night out. And I'm like, this is one of the hardest leagues to win in the world. Because of the dense talent pool.
Yeah. You can see it. I mean, every single game, it's just like, God, it's so competitive. And just the talent level is unbelievable. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, there were times where I was watching Lauren, and I'm like, I grabbed my assistant's leg like, damn, like, that shit was nice.
Yeah, and it's probably the other team as well. Yeah.
Sometimes when you're watching, like, this greatness, like, I'm like, that was one of my things. I was like, one of the best things I can do is just like get out of the way. Just let these girls go play. You know, let them be who they are.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's incredible. It's so exciting to watch. I guess sort of on that too, like how do you build like rapport with your players? Like, and finding that fine line of friendship, but also, you know, having that respect and everything like that. And is it different with men and women?
I will say the coaching, the X's and O's strategies, that's all the same. The psyche and dealing with women is different. I mean, the makeup is different. You know, and I don't like to make broad strokes about genders really, right? Because I think everybody's very individual, and I've seen super, super meticulous guys who are so detail oriented, where I think it's a broad stroke to say guys don't pay attention to details. Well, some do, you know? Or it's a broad stroke to say, you know, every woman is detail oriented. No, they're not. There's some women that they're not great off the board. They don't think the game's cerebral. I mean, there's different types of players. So I just want to preface that, first of all, and different brain types, really. But I like to use the analogy because, you know, I love fishing, right? So I'm a deep sea
fisher. I love fishing too. I love deep sea fishing as well.
I mean, you better. You're in Australia, and it's my bucket list. I got to get over there at some point.
Yeah, we'll take you for sure. We'll sort it out.
So, if you were going to go out on a charter, you and there's a group of guys and a group of girls, and you're going out, ask any captain who the best fishermen are, and they'll say the women because they listen to the strategy of how you got to. It's not just about brute force all the time. The guys don't really listen because they just want to beast this fish, like just so they get broke off a lot. Their line gets broke off because they just want to beast it, where the women are really listening to the technique and the guys kind of already think they know. And I think sometimes there's some of that where, and like I said, it's individual. I was with some Spurs teams where if Pop drew something on the board or whatever, they could just execute. I was on other teams. They struggled to execute off the board, and that's male or female. That doesn't matter. This group though, that I had this year in Vegas, they were good off the board.
Yeah.
You know, I could draw something and they were just locked in. And I'm not going to say, like I said, it's hard to say who's better listeners, this and that, but the relationship building piece has been so rewarding for me. Yeah. I've absolutely loved this team. They're so much fun. And luckily we're all super competitive. We find being competitive fun. And so you kind of have a like Barry, but really it's just about relationship building and holding people accountable. You know, if Asia doesn't make the right play, she's going to be on film just as much as the 12th man. And I think sometimes coaches are afraid to be honest. And I think at the end of the day, real competitors and real winners crave it. They want it. They need it. And what I'll say about this team is I tried to hold everybody to the same standard. Not equal is not fair, right? Right. So, but everybody was held to the same standard of like, we're going to play the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. You could definitely tell that you're a really close knit team and that you were having a lot of fun and like mm-hmm. you're on the same page. I guess the other thing that I've noticed, particularly with the WNBA, like social media and everything, like on other teams, and this was never, and this has been another thing with you, like you've just been so good at working with your athletes, whereas like other teams are,
right,
their stuff is getting out there and it's like, how, like what happened to this like close tight-knit group, you know, and where teams stick together through thick and thin and keep their tight,
right?
At the moment, like there are teams that are not like that, and yeah. athletes are able to bag coaches and bag associations and clubs, and it's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Why are you doing that? It's counterproductive.
Right. I think it's a culture piece, right? Like you want to create great culture.
Yeah.
Well, it's, and I'm not saying so-and-so's bad character and this and that. I mean, crap goes down, but I think there is something to be said to a maturity in the sense of like, okay, me and you got a problem. Let's sit down and talk about it. Let's not air each other's like, what?
Yeah.
We're trying to hurt each other. We're trying to tear each other down. We're trying to make our coach look bad. We're trying to make our teammate look bad. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. And I think when you start to do that and air any dirty laundry, whether it's yours or somebody else's.
Yeah.
Like you really need to, you need a reality check, dude, because that stuff spreads. Just like good culture can also spread. And I think the basis for, you know, getting good culture is good character. Like you can't, I always say this, it's like, you gotta have good soil. If you don't have good soil to put down roots, you're not gonna be very productive. And I think for me, the chemistry piece that we had this year with each other was palpable. I mean, if you walked into our practices, sometimes I'm like, let's get serious. Let's tighten up here a little bit yeah. because they're having so much fun all the time. But I am of the mindset of like happy players make better players. Yeah. I want to create an environment that you want to come to work. You want to come to compete and be serious. Like, and I think sometimes fun, right? Fun is like a bad word. And it's like, it doesn't have to be a bad word. Like we all started playing this game. And we're still playing a game. At the end of the day, we're not solving world problems, you yeah. know? Like, we're entertainers. We're entertainers. And so I think creating a culture of trust and respect, because it really comes down to respecting each other as well. And I think that starts from the top. Like, I'm going to give you the utmost respect, and I demand it back. I'm not going to talk to you in a disrespectful or a personal way. I'm not going to personally attack you. I'm just not. Like, we can talk and maybe we can have disagreements. And I'm sure we will have disagreements, but there's a way to go about it and a way to say it and a time to say it. And so I think just being really cognitive of those things goes a long ways. And like I said, I try to spend time with them just so they get to know me off the court and they know that I care about them and I believe in them. I mean, I left the NBA because I really believed in this team and I thought there was greatness there and I wanted to be a part of them. And so I jumped ship and came back home.
Well, the WNBA is far better off with you in the WNBA, whether it's coaching or playing, whatever. But on that, like, do you think you'll go back to the NBA? I mean, obviously, at some point, we want you their head coach, like coaching an NBA team. Is that something that you want to do?
You know what? It's hard to say. It was a goal. I would say it used to be. I don't know if it really is anymore. If it happens, it happens. I've loved coming back and being a part of this league. There's a camaraderie. There is a sisterhood. And the NBA is a brotherhood. I mean, and when you're trying to get into Big Brother, you know, a lot of times I had a great environment. You know, Pop created a great culture for me to really dive in and be hands-on with the guys and build relationships with those guys and really be able to teach, you know, run scouts, whatever it is. He was a great mentor. And so I don't know if my path leads me back there. Right. You know, I tell people, you're not always in charge of your journey in which direction you're going, but you are in charge of how you walk it. And so whatever position I'm in, whatever opportunity comes, I want to do the best that I can. And like I tell my girls, like, trying hard matters. Like, you try your hardest. And some days it's good enough and some days it's not. And you got to be good with either one.
And you got to keep grinding. You just got to keep doing it. One foot in front of the other, right?
Yeah.
What are some of your greatest takeaways from your years with Greg Popovich? How did he influence your coaching style? Was it a communication piece? Was it like working with people, or was it X's and O's more so?
I mean, it definitely was X's and O's, especially right. Early on, just learning different lingo, different everything. I mean, there's a lot to learn. I had to learn the league, you know? I mean, I think everybody, we're all junkies, right? The NBA watches the W, the W watches the NBA, because we're basketball junkies and that's the best basketball. So we all know about each other and watch each other, but it's one thing to watch, you know, 1 through 8 and kind of know. I had to learn the league, you know, through 15, through some G League stuff, like how other coaches' tendencies, what they do, what they run late game. Like, there was so much to learn, as well as our own, you know, system. And there was nothing more intimidating, Lauren, than like, giving my first scouting report, I'm like looking at Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili, who know this system and the league 1,000 times more than me. And I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, it's like, and Tim's looking at me like, are you done? I'm like, oh man. So, you know, you get put through the grinder, but it's all growth, right? And experiences, and Pop really gave us really the framework to be involved and do a lot of coaching and be hands-on. Not all coaches are like that, but he was, you know, he empowered us. And so I took full advantage of that. And then, you know, by a couple of years in, I was like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Gee, that's cool. We'll move quickly on just to family. Like, obviously, you know, you're a mom, got kids. Mm-hmm. How supportive was the NBA having kids around, and then also in the WNBA and the organizations that you've worked for? Is it a supportive environment now with kids? Because I feel like back when I was playing, I don't even think there were kids around, ever.
Yeah. I think we've evolved as a society too. Like, working moms are part of the fabric now, you know? Yeah. That's part of the reasons why I came back to the W2 is like, I want to be around my kids more, like just the lifestyle, the downtime, you know, I have downtime right now. I'm missing moments with my kids that I'll never get back. And so that was part of it. But I wanted, you know, we have Dierica Hamby, she has a daughter. If we're really going to be about like creating a family atmosphere, then let's be about it. And so, you know, I wasn't too strict. What I care about is you come and do your job. You coming and doing your job to the best of your ability, I got no problems. You want to bring Amaya on the bus, bring Amaya. Like, I'm going to bring my kids. And the players were so great with my kids, but I tried to involve them. Like, this is life. I want them around. I want them to see what I do. It's important that they see what I do. Yeah. You know, they look at me as a coach. And here's the thing, they don't really know it was a big deal to be in the NBA. You know, they just see me coach.
It's just my coach,
you know? I try to make it as much family atmosphere as I can. And the Spurs, honestly, COVID kind of messed up everything. You know, it's like nobody could come, nobody could be around, you know? But, you know, there was times where Kaden would come on a Spurs trip with me, come on the plane with me. Now, it wasn't like all the time, but, you know, a few times. You know, if we had a one game trip, that I would take him with me, and Pop was always really great about that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I can, like, having kids of my own now, it's really difficult to, like, I have to set bound, like, these are non-negotiables for me and the kids, you know, even to play this WNBL season, it's like, my kids need to be with me. If they can't travel with me, I can't play. You know what I mean? So it has been, and you're right, society is evolving and trying to, you know, make more, make concessions for women with children so that they can be a part of the organizations as athletes, coaches, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah.
And, you know, Lauren, too, Jenny Busick,
Yeah.
You know, single mom, has her daughter. She has it a sweet deal with Indiana because the Pacers value her. They yeah. value what she brings to the table. So they're like, what do we need to do to make this work? You know, where I think she, I forgot what she told me, but she's only missing a few games this year, where in years past she's missed more because she doesn't want to be on the road. Like, the NBA is a grind. I mean, yeah. like, when you think about 82 games, I don't know if you've ever sat down and just looked at an NBA schedule.
No, I haven't.
It's bonkers when you just see it mapped out like that. And yeah. that's just games. That's not including practices and travel and team functions and appearances, you know. That's just purely games. And so more and more people are valuing what women bring to the table, and the whole mom thing, it becomes, not that it becomes in the shadows, but it becomes less of an issue for people that are doing the hiring process.
Yeah.
As it should.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, Bella, I think that's all that's all the questions I had for you, but just really appreciate your time and just your experience, everything. It's incredible. And yeah, just thank you.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, hit me up.
Actually, I do have one more question for you.
Yeah.
Why did you go into coaching? Like, after playing for so long, why did you want to be a coach? Because of the commitment. When I retired, I was like, that. Too much commitment.
Right. It is. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And here's the thing I think people don't realize, right? Like, you have your schedule, this, that, and they're in the office or doing whatever. I'm like, you don't get time on the clock for when you're up till 3 a.m. watching film, and then you're up at 6 because your mind does not turn off because you're so responsible for yeah. everybody. Everything falls yeah. on your plate. And I think for me, I was kind of dabbling, right? Like, I feel like athletes either go into coaching or TV, right? So I feel like every former athlete, coaching or TV. Not that other people don't do other things, but I was doing TV, and the guy that I was doing TV with was like, the losing coach walks out, right? And he looked at me, he was like, man, he's like, that's why TV's the best. Like, you can never leave the gym a loser. And I was like, yeah, it's not for me, because I can never leave it a winner. Like, I'd rather be in the fight
yeah,
and have a bad day and lose than just be talking about it all the time, or talking about the people that are actually right. in the daily fight and grind. Yeah. Like, I want to be a voice in the foxhole. I don't want to just be sitting there talking about it. Mm. But as I'm about ready to do some stuff with ESPN and talk about it.
Yeah, but you're like an expert.
I'm in the off-season.
You're awesome. Just thank you so much. You're a legend.
Yeah, you're welcome, Lauren. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too, Dahl. Right, stay well. Care. And yeah, bye.
You too. Bye.